All right, go for it.
So you're going to splice it together?
Sure am.
Okay, yeah.
Next time I have to hold the button, I think. I didn't remember if I had to push it or hold it.
Okay, so hopefully this show will be complete together.
It will.
Yeah. So anyways.
Relax, I got it.
There was, you know,
some
shenanigans happening in there. He walks into a room where a woman is saying, you know, that these people are touching her and stuff like that. So he turns his phone on, puts it in his pocket so he can record voice basically of what's happening. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? He never played it for anybody, but did tell a few people that he recorded it. He erased it immediately, never like gave it to anybody else. Nobody listened to it outside the people that were on that call or anything like that. And, you know, he wasn't liked by one of the lieutenants that was at that station who reported him.
You know what I was thinking? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
And go ahead.
No.
I think everybody's going to be interested in what you got to say.
Probably not. Go first.
Well, finish. Go. You already interrupted.
What I was thinking about is maybe a lot more public service people should wear body cams.
I think
maybe
that's going to be.
Maybe firefighters should wear body cams. Maybe nurses should wear body cams.
There's places like, that that's happening.
As much as people have false accusations of things, like, fuck you. I'm not doing anything that is going to harm you. And I would prefer to protect myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's happening places. Like, a lot of places like are doing this.
I would like one.
Well,
also, I would like a scribe.
Yes. Yeah. For another show, baby.
I know.
Yeah. So, you know, like, anyways, he gets accused of this stuff and, you know, terminated, which he then was reinstated and he retired. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it where he was there. That day, I don't think he made an error in judgment like anything.
I
he was just
he
trying
either.
To protect people and then he erased it. You know, it was like, shouldn't have been a non-issue.
Were there cameras in the back of the rescues then?
Not. There were cameras. They never transported her, so she was a refusal. So she was a non-patient. You know what I'm saying? Not a thing. So like, it wasn't anything that you know. That's why he erased it. It's not a fucking non-issue, man.
Yeah,
like, he's done. So you know, it gets turned in for that, and that's what caused this whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Obviously, I've spoken in general terms because there's no, like, HIPAA violation in that, right? There's all court record shit.
Right.
But he did.
I did almost pee my pants when I saw that she was arrested and charged.
But she has never been a good person. Like,
she's not a good person.
She was
like, how many times has she been arrested for felonies?
I don't know. I know that she did get her.
It's like over 50, I think.
Her license, her LPN license revoked. You know, she was an OPN at one time and got it revoked because she was an asshole. So, obviously, there's something wrong to lose your LPN. You know how many people, like, do fucked up shit?
How do you actually, like, yes, I do.
Yeah. Revoked by the Board of Nursing.
I've also known quite a few people that have gone through at least one of those things. Like the drug.
Impaired provider.
Yeah, yeah, whatever it's called. Yeah.
I love how you think that everybody else knows exactly what you're thinking.
Well, they should.
Well, okay. I love you.
Just kidding.
So the impaired provider thing, I don't know if that's what she lost it for, you know, or anything, but, you know, she did lose her license, like, and that's hard to do.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you know, so, so good luck to her.
Yeah.
You know, like, the craziest thing is that Josh got charged with, like a wire fraud or some shit like that. Like last time people were charged with that in the state of Florida. You know how many people were charged in the state when Josh was charged in the state of Florida?
Uh-huh.
In the history
of the
state.
It was like 1906 or something, right?
Well, I don't even remember when it was, but he's the second person ever charged with it.
Yeah. Because it's bullshit.
Yes. And nobody's ever been convicted of it. So, right. So,
there's no wires though.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a cell phone. It's all wireless.
Well, it's the wire out there, baby.
It's a joke.
I love you. I think you're beautiful. Like, you crack yourself up on your own jokes.
I know.
You're like that, what's his name? Kreischer.
Yeah.
You laugh,
I laugh at my own jokes.
You laugh at your own jokes. Yeah. Well, great.
He would love it.
I'm glad you're laughing. Anyways, what's your word? Did you pick a word or no?
Oh. You told me to put my phone away.
Well, I don't know if you had a word.
Cardiacs.
Oh, that's a good one for today's topic.
I liked it.
Cardiacs. Is it when somebody scares you like you do to me and you almost give me a cardiac?
No, but no. That is funny.
What
it's
is it?
It's a psychedelic punk band you probably haven't heard of.
Oh, Jesus. That sucks. Yep.
Or a mysterious being that keeps arresting people.
That makes no fucking sense.
Like a cardiac arrest?
Oh, that's... If that's not a Dr. Abel joke. If that's not a...
I thought it was funny.
That is funny. It's a good dad joke. Anyways, good topic for today. Some good lessons to learn on there. And by the way, we are going to have,
a clue.
A competition clue today.
Yep.
Again, which apparently we haven't advertised that appropriately. So people know to listen.
So you're going to have to listen to the last few shows. I don't remember when we started. So good luck.
The last three.
I mean, maybe it was more than that.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyways, continue. So what was on the news that struck the topic today?
The FDA issued an alert that the Impella has been charged with 49 deaths, globally, of perforating the heart muscle.
Well, wow. How many? It's a 49 out of how many thousands?
So there's 66,000 Impellas in the U.S.
Yeah.
And there's another 26,000 in other countries.
Yep.
So, and that's just the machine. That's not how many patients have been put on them.
Hundreds of thousands of patients have been put on it.
Right.
So it's this 49 is a negligible amount.
I wouldn't think that it is. And I mean, here's the thing that struck me. So we do cadaver labs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes when we do cadaver labs, we take a look at the heart. And we're able to identify the vessels and the
You want to take a drink? Because you keep starting clearing your throat. Go
and
take a drink.
And the other take stuff the in
drink.
The heart.
Yeah, take the drink. There you go.
You know you're encouraging this.
I know, but you're clearing your throat like your throat is dry. So the biggest thing is that basically there's bad people that are bad candidates for, Impellas.
Absolutely.
You're going to perforate. So it's I don't mean negligible for the family of people whose family member died from a perforated.
But here's the thing. You have to look at the general health of the patient, right?
Yeah.
Are any of these patients in good health?
None of them are.
None of them are.
Yeah.
I mean, they all have comorbidities and they all... how many of them are actually going to survive without it?
No, reason is being put in there is because they have poor...
No other options.
Yeah, they have poor ejection fractions, poor cardiac output, so they're putting that thing on there to bridge them.
And we're crossing our fingers and saying a prayer that they're going
to
survive.
Yeah, they're using it to bridge them to getting a new heart or getting a procedure.
Or getting a heart arrest.
Yeah, a bypass or something like that.
Evidently, if you let something rest, it kind of starts to regenerate a little bit.
Yeah,
a little you get healing. Better ejection fractions and you get to do more.
Yeah. So when you look at it, Impellas, 2019, there was a study done, American Heart and Northwestern University did a study looking at 542 patients that, randomized used of either they either got a balloon pump or they got a Impella, and it compared the inner aortic balloon pump to the Impella.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all patients were considered to be in cardiogenic shock.
Yep.
Poor cardiac output.
Yep.
And cardiac index less than 2.3. So basically, 2.4 to 4 is kind of a normal cardiac index type thing. It's an equation they come up with.
Yep.
But anytime your cardiac index is less than 2.4, it's just considered to be a poorly functioning heart.
Yeah. Failure.
Yeah. So, so they basically randomized, who got an Impella, who got a intra-aortic balloon pump.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at it the Impella is not without risk, and neither is the balloon pump.
Yeah.
No
cardiac devices without risk.
Yeah. So somewhere around 31% of the people they got the balloon pump, the people that got the balloon pump, 31% of that group did die. You good?
Yeah.
The Impella group was 43% of those patients died.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, the major cause of death was bleeding.
Yep.
So whether
they were overcoagulated
or perforated aorta, or something like that. But the obviously the balloon pump group was smaller of deaths versus the Impella group. But however, they still still like if you make the treatment line one as compared to death, most people live that are placed on the device and are bridged to another, you know, to the fix, the ultimate fix, whether they, you know, end up getting a new heart or getting bypass and stuff like that.
Right.
So both devices are good. Both devices have their, you know, advantages versus, you know, disadvantages and indications versus relative contraindications. You know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of patients that just, you know, aren't good candidates to get this, but there is better than not doing anything.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny today. One of the things, the topics in therapy was, you know, ethical choices that you make,
mm-hmm.
and you know, ethics should be a general guideline to doing what's right in society, right? So, but sometimes there is the right thing is going against the grain, against what the normal ethical norm would be.
Absolutely.
You know, to do things. So, but when you look at, when you go against the grain, really, you're breaking a safety rule.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So sometimes you have to break that safety rule to give the patient the best advantage.
Yeah.
Because when you look at it, not doing anything versus doing something, maybe, you know, you've got to make the choice there. And it's, you know, up to the patient and the family, whether you're doing it or not.
Yeah.
But every time you put one of these devices in, you're getting informed. You should get informed on the reasons why you're getting it, and you should get informed on the dangers of getting it.
I mean, I would say, hopefully there's time for there to be some sort of informative whatever. But most of the time, to be honest, like if you show up in the emergency department and maybe your heart's not working or you go straight to the cath lab and you need a device like this, they try to get a hold of your family or your loved one or whatever.
But there's still some informed or implied consent, right?
Right.
If I bring you to the consent. Yeah, if I bring you to the cath lab, I'm implying that
you want to live.
Yeah.
That, and we're going to do as much as we can to help
me
you
as
that.
Let's say I was the cardiologist there. Yeah. I'm assuming that you're on this table because you want me to do everything possible.
Absolutely.
Right? So, like, yeah, I mean, however, there is dangerous to, you know, the same dangers of cathing a patient are the same dangers of the Impella could put you on.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So yes. It's like, so I really think, you know, it's...
Here's the thing. We generally... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to
interrupt. No, go ahead.
We generally try to do the best for the patient. And I do oftentimes think that it's insulting when people think that we don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that, you know, we were just talking about that yesterday. You know, I'm working on a case that, you know, they kind of talked about that. They were saying that the patient, you know, why is this patient that's alive with no deficit suing this group?
It's a great question.
You
why?
Know, like, you know, yes, there was a event of cardiac arrest, but it's the same danger that anybody would go through. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, it's funny when... I find it hard when there's experts that offer opinions, specifically physicians. I love, like, as a nurse medic, the cases that I do get a lot of times is, I'm advising attorneys on, you know, what a physician is saying in a deposition, you know?
Right.
And like, some of these physicians are just fucking dumb as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, to offer an opinion that, you know, anybody else out there can rebut. You know, one of the most common ones that I run into is when somebody actually says, they never shot a chest x-ray after that, placing that ET tube.
Who the fuck cares?
Well, here's the thing. Outside the fucking hospital, people get intubated all the goddamn time, and there's no chest x-ray shot of that.
Because there's no ability to
right?
do that.
So, but people go, that's out of the hospital, right? So this is my favorite part. Every physician goes, EMS, in hospital care, obviously it's going to differ a little bit, you know. And I go, yes, sir, you're absolutely right. But every day people have surgeries. Every day people get intubated in operating rooms. And guess what they don't fucking do?
None of them get chest x-rays.
None of them get chest x-rays.
For ET2 placement.
Yes. So we confirmed. So who, and I start the conversation with every physician, if you can, you know, if you can hold your questions to the end.
Yeah.
So I start the conversation with every physician the same way. Who would you consider the expert in endotracheal intubation?
Anesthesia.
He's going to go, anesthesia. Yeah. I go, absolutely. Do you know how many times an anesthesia person gets a chest x-ray when they intubate their patient?
No, I don't know that.
None.
Oh.
If they're doing it in the operating room, nobody gets a fucking chest x-ray to determine
the how do they know that?
And title seal too.
Huh.
Yeah, imagine that shit. You know, same way we do it in the field. So go fuck yourself on that whole thing. It's nice if you have a chest x-ray, you know, but, you know, there's other ways that to get imaging on the fly. You can use an ultrasound machine. Look for the, you know, the bullet sign, that double track sign. You can look for that. Like,
what's that?
It won't. That's for a later episode. You should probably, if you want to know about that, we're going to have an ultrasound class coming out here at the end of the year. So, but yeah, it's, you know, there's a way to, you know, place the probe on the neck and you can actually see if the endotracheal tube is in place, you know, so there's a lot of things you can actually do. But when you look at it, they call it a bullet sign just because you asked.
Well, you we'll talk about that later.
Is the space, there's a space between in the trachea, the tube, the other part of the trachea, and then you can see the esophagus underneath it. That's how you know.
Does it look like a bullet?
Looks like a bullet when you look at it. I love you.
Cool.
Love you forever.
I love you forever.
All right. So, you know, anyways, so Impella, good device.
Yeah.
You know, when we're teaching a transport, there's a lot of transport people. The balloon pump has been a very popular, like, aeromedical critical care questions and stuff like that. We always kind of do you know, comparison, you know, like go through waveforms and placement, you know.
What do you get to do with it?
Yeah, like, which is absolutely nothing. You stare at it, motherfucker. Don't touch anything. You're not a cardiologist. But, you know, when you're transporting an Impella, a few of the things to it is make sure that, obviously, you, most of us, you have a company phone that we get. And one of the things I like to do is I take a picture of the screen. And I look at, you know, the RPMs and all that stuff that's on the screen. I look at the purge bag. Making sure that, you know, I'm going to have enough of that for the transport. So if we're going pretty far, you want to make sure that that's there. You want to make
What is considered enough?
Well, a fucking, like, full bag. Like, it doesn't purge. It doesn't use a lot of fluid. So if it's near empty, something's wrong. Look on the floor. So bubbles and air in there, like, the system alarms pretty quickly. So you want to make sure all of that's intact.
Right.
You also want to make sure, you know, your console has no cracks or anything on it. You know, any the cassette that's inserted where the purge line is, making sure there's no cracks on that. No alarms, anything. And then talk with the people, like, you know, like what is been going on with the patient. And then I like to always ask. One of my favorite things to tell people in class is I don't want to know what the fuck happened for the last 2 days. I don't know what the fuck has been going on for the last 2 days with this patient. I don't care. Like, give me the highlights of that. But I wanted
the family nice.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I don't care about that either. So, because I'm not taking them. So, so, like, I want to know if, you know, if my transport's an hour, I want to know what's been happening for the last hour and a half or so.
Absolutely.
You know, that's where I want to know, like, what's going to be the changes, you know. In
what might I see?
Yeah. So, those are the things I'm looking for, you know. You know, you need to grab that or something. Cool. So those are the things I'm looking at when I see the patient, you know, and with the Impella. And then, you know, move the patient over gingerly. One of the things with the Impella is it's a heavier machine.
Yeah.
And it's usually on this very particular cart for it. So we will use the staff to go out to the helicopter, load them, then unload it off the cart. And then making sure that we have the appropriate straps, like those straps that are made for the type of airframe that you're in to secure this. You know what I'm saying?
Even for ground.
Yeah. And making sure that thing is nice and secure. You don't want that thing to flop anywhere and, you know, not fucking work because it's working really, you know.
Right.
When you see, and then just, you know, common alarms, purge alarm, like you're fucking, you know, air in the system or the bag is running out. You know, so definitely get a new bag. We'll talk about what that fluid is. Suction alarm usually happens when the patient's got, you know, he's hypovolemic, right? So you want to give them fluids. Give your patient fluids. Yes. Don't touch the fucking machine.
Don't touch the machine.
You're not the person to touch the machine, so don't touch that shit. You know, and then when you're, one of the important things is when you're going to the facility that you're going to, making sure they're going to meet you with a cart.
Right.
You know, so the same cart you took them off, you may want to, you know, them meet you there. So sometimes it's a luxury that you have. Sometimes it's a luxury you don't have. So, but those are pretty simple.
So if they don't meet you, how do you get them from the helipad to where you're going?
On our, like, I've had that happen several times.
I'm sure.
Like, there is a, you know, the same thing, you can put it on the stretcher. Like, it, it'll clamp on the rail. So for us, that'll work, you know, so it works pretty good. If you, you know, Striker stretchers doesn't work very well with the little, with the plastic wings, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes that's hard to do. So you can, somebody's going to carry that bastard. So, but,
super light.
Yeah. On the helicopter stretcher, it works pretty, pretty well. We can connect it to it. You know, some facilities don't have a cart, you know, a rep is bringing a cart over or something like that. Then they, you can,
well, some helicopters don't even have stretchers in them, or like,
yeah, so
you don't, you can't get the stretcher out of it. You just have to,
yeah, bring a, you bring a sled out, right? Yeah. So that even works better if you have, if that's your situation, because then you're getting then a hospital
somebody
bed.
Somebody has to meet you.
Yeah. Somebody's meeting you. You got a hospital bed. You
yeah. can
clip the thing on the side there. So, you know, not that difficult. It's a pretty easy device to transport. I've actually transported a patient that's had two of them in, you know? So two impellers. I've actually transported a patient.
How does that work?
Yeah, crazy. One is sitting in one ventricle, one sitting in the other one. It's a pretty crazy shit.
Wow.
I don't know how they fucking do that, but it's happened. And then, or there's two in the same chamber fucking working. You're like, if you need two impellers to live, get a priest.
Seriously?
Yeah. Like, it's crazy. I don't know how they did that shit. But I've seen a balloon pump and an impeller. I've seen that several times.
Yeah.
That's pretty common where I've seen a balloon pump and an impeller put in.
Yeah.
So hold on. So
this keep going off.
So who is it?
Spam.
Okay. Well, why would we turn the phone off?
I'm trying.
So there we go. Thank you. Sorry for everybody out there. We know that she does a lot of things that distract you. So
you're not even here.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So,
and I'm not naked.
Yeah, I know. You're about to get put into timeout. So that's part of my notes there. So the best recommended purge fluid out there, 20% dextrose with 50 units per milliliter of heparin. So, you know, in the fluid there. So some alarms that you get there. So you get a position wrong alarm, which is a common alarm. So, actually, I'm going to let you read these because my eyes are blurry. So, there's alarms there.
Because my eyes aren't blurry.
Yeah.
Let's see. Position alarm is inlet and outlet in the same chamber in the LV or both in aorta. Clinical picture is commonly during startup phase and post-transport phase, and then reposition under echo or fluoroscopy, which you don't do.
Mm-hmm.
Position unknown is difference between max and minimal pressure on aortic pressure curve, frequently due to low native heart pulsatility, and then you reposition that under echo or fluoroscopy, which again, you don't do. You really don't do. Oh, no, this one. Suction. Is a common alarm. It's above NI motor current necessary for set performance level. Device is too deep or low volume status. So you reposition and optimize volume status. So like giving a bolus.
Mm-hmm.
Low volume suction. The interpretation is flow lower than expected for set performance level may cause hemolysis if positioned wrong. So optimize volume status or RV failure is the treatment. High purge pressure is rare, but the interpretation is increased pressure at purge system due to increased resistance anywhere along the purge lumen. Picture is after long-term support, catheter kink, or blood ingress into motor.
Yep.
So you place a new purge cassette when longer support is needed, and then sudden pump stop, which is very rare, most likely clot ingestion. Clinical picture is possible systemic emboli, and treatment is exclude LV thrombosis, adequate anticoagulation.
So the biggest thing is that the whole list, that purge alarm is one that you have. You okay there?
Yeah.
So that purge alarm is one of the things you have there. And then the I'll take that thing there again. And then the other one, and the other one is the the purge alarm is one, and then the other one is suction.
Oh yeah,
really two alarms that really have to do with you. The other shit alarms like that, while you're in flight, well, as they say in the eastern countries, inshallah. If the Lord wills it, you'll get there alive. You know what I mean? We're kind of fucked with it, if that's the reason behind it, because we ain't doing anything. We're not moving that catheter. We're not doing any of that shit.
But you can give them a bolus.
You can give them bolus. Always give bolus. When in doubt, give them some juice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So the inner aortic balloon pump versus the Impella, same indications, pretty similar contraindications. We're going to go through all that shit there.
Right.
But it does have, like, the Impella does have one advantage over the inner aortic balloon pump.
What's that?
And that is the inner aortic balloon pump, for the most part, is you need a stable EKG. You see what I'm saying? You need a stable EKG. You need and if you're not in a stable rhythm or the
irregular, how long do you have to be stable for?
Well, it's not a phrase you're stable. You basically got to have a heart rate between 60 and 100 beats per minute.
Oh,
if you're too tacky or too Brady, it doesn't work well. You can put the machine on pressure as a trigger.
Right.
And, you know, it works, you know, because if you're in cardiac arrest, you put it on pressure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that stability or if the patient's got tons of dysrhythmias, that, you know, like the balloon pump doesn't work as well.
Right.
Right, because it's looking at the diastolic period to actually inflate, right? It provides that counter pulsation therapy, and we'll explain that here in a second. But with the Impella, you don't need, you know, you can be Brady and it's still going to do its thing. The Impella is doing what it's doing. So a lot of times when I transport the Impella, the map and stuff that I'm using is what's on that machine.
Yeah,
I'm not really doing a peripheral pressure on that patient, or even if they have an A-line. A lot of times the best pressure you can get is from the Impella machine itself.
So do you ever chart peripheral pressures when somebody has an A-line?
I do not.
Correlate it?
Some of my partners do.
Why?
I have no clue.
And I don't understand that.
And quite honestly, like if I have an Impella, I don't even chart pressures at all. I charge MAP. I want to chart a map. You know, the map was this. The map, you know what I mean? It's like, but some of my partners do, and that's fine. Like, you know, it's information. But
I had a nurse tell me one time that she doesn't care about maps since she left cardiac ICU.
Okay, well.
I was like, what?
She's an idiot. Like, I would not talk to her the rest of the fucking day. You lady are a dumbass. You know what I'm saying?
I was like, oh, okay.
But, you know, so that's one of the big things, the difference between that, you know. So with your balloon pump, in the essence here is that we're trying to increase coronary artery perfusion. You know what I'm saying? Like the balloon pump is pretty, like that's his job, coronary artery perfusion. I think that the Impella does that, but it also increases cardiac output.
Yeah.
So you actually move more volume with the Impella than you do with a balloon pump.
Coronary artery perfusion with a balloon pump.
Well, not necessarily. It's about the same. Mm-hmm. It's about the same. So patients that have really poor cardiac output, like really aren't great balloon pump patients. You know, a person with a real bad cardiac output can't be a great Impella patient.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So there's a lot of things where the balloon pump just doesn't do as much as the Impella can do. You know what I'm saying? So, but the biggest thing here is we're trying to, if for people out there, you got to remember that your heart perfuses, your coronary arteries perfuse during the diastolic phase.
Yeah.
You know, if you follow a drop of blood, and I love doing this in class. We do this with people all the time. Follow a drop of blood through from the right side to the left side. You know, blood gets to the right atrium through three vessels, right? The inferior superior vena cava. Mm-hmm. The other one is the coronary sinus, which is the blood that the heart uses.
Yep.
Then it goes through the tricuspid valve to the right ventricle, through the pulmonary semilunar valve, then it goes to the pulmonary artery, diffusion is going to happen, then it comes out as a pulmonary vein, which goes into the left atrium. And then you go through, am I boring you there?
Because
you're
yawning.
Nope. And then going through the mitral valve. And then which is also the bicuspid valve, into the left ventricle. And then it goes through the aortic semilunar valve. What's important here is when the aortic valve opens, it closes the opening to the coronary arteries.
Right.
So when the valve closes against the rush of blood, that causes a backflow, which is what we call counter pulsation, which is what feeds the coronary arteries.
Right.
So it's simple plumbing here. So when you have poor coronary artery perfusion, we put something in your pulmonary, in your aortic artery to basically, you're killing me with the yawn.
Sorry. I don't know why I keep doing it.
We'll get down
here soon. Keep going.
So you increase that diastolic phase. You're augmenting the diastolic blood pressure. And the more of the balloon that you use during the diastolic phase, the more augmented the blood pressure is. So, you know, you can augment it 10%, you know, up to 100%. So, you know, and the size of the patient is how they come up with the different size balloons and so on and so forth. So for another show there.
Is that like, as far as the size of the patient goes, is that like what you, like, I can't think of the word that I want. Not like what they weigh, but what they should weigh.
Yeah, ideal body weight.
That's it.
I think it's more of a height. You know, how tall they are.
Okay.
Yeah, so like depending on the you know, the, and it comes in some milliliters, like, you know.
Well, I mean, ideal body weight's based on height too.
Yeah, but this is like, you know, and I don't know how they pick the balloon, but I'm pretty sure it's height driven. So like, you know, it could be a 40 ml balloon all the way to like an 80 ml balloon or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think the taller you are, the bigger the balloon.
That makes sense.
You know, there's a couple complications that happens with balloons sometimes when they migrate too far forward,
right,
versus migrating downward. And when you migrate too far forward, you lose the pulse on the side of insertion, the distal pulse, right? So I would check the radial pulse there. If it migrates too far back, it covers the renal artery, so you'll have a decrease in urinary output.
Yep.
So one of the things is...
Which one is the one that has the blood in the urine?
What are you talking about?
Like if one of the... I don't remember which... I thought it was the Impella. If something happened with the Impella, you start to get blood in your urine?
It may be the Impella, because if you're getting blood in your urine with the balloon pump, that's bad.
Well, yeah, it's bad with the Impella.
Yeah.
It's bad with whichever one that I...
Yeah, poor urinary output is with that. I don't know about that. I'll have to look that up for the
Impella. Maybe it's the... I don't remember.
We should probably look those comments up we put them out there in the air. So, but, you know, kind of like one of those quick things to go over when you're looking at the, you know, these devices. A lot of transporting devices has nothing to do with what could happen to the patient. It's just the safety of carrying the device there, right? Like, you know, making sure you have enough battery, making sure you have enough of the gas that you're there, or a way to plug the machine in into your, you know, either in the back of the ambulance, you know, to your inverter power, and the same thing for the helicopter. You can plug that shit in because it could die, you know, if you're relying on batteries and shit like that.
So is that the kind of test questions you'd get?
Yeah, you know, extra batteries, extra helium if you're doing the balloon pump. You know, and I could give you a bunch of test questions, but, you know, we run a class. You should fucking come take one. You know what I mean? Come take a class, and I'm not going to, you know, keep giving you fucking free samples like you want me to give them all the time. So, you know, so those are device safety stuff.
Yeah.
You know, also, like, there is a thing in a future program, and there's a lot of people that have put out podcasts on this, is how to read research, how to look at papers and stuff that people put out there. Like, sometimes, you know, if anything you learn in a statistics class is that you can skew all fucking data.
Absolutely.
All data can be skewed to what you want.
Whatever you want it to say.
Yeah, it's data data manipulation is what the world lives on out there. So you can do a lot of that when it comes to that. So, but yeah, that's about it. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, good.
You know, I love it.
Clues.
Oh, yes. So we have some clues out there for the next, you know, competition coming up.
Yep.
19th and 20th.
Of April.
April. 18
this
teams.
This month.
Yeah, 18 teams.
Today's the 4th, right?
Today is the 4th. Yeah.
So 2 weeks from now. Oh, sorry. 2 weeks and a day from now.
Yeah. So big patients you're going to have on here. Like, not big, big ones. Not big in size.
You're going to have big patients.
Yeah, but, you know, they're going to be complicated. They're going to be very complicated when you're looking at it. But, you know, when you look at patients that, like, for example, I'm not trying to give the patients away on here.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, you look at PHTLS, look at AMLS, look at those, the reading material there. Look at the Nancy Carolyn book, how to handle different types of airways and stuff.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I think is kind of cool, and it came to my mind here, is if you're having to do more than two or three maneuvers to clear an airway, like, so you're you're trying to secure an advanced airway on a patient, and you have to do three or four more things that are out of the normal that you would have to do, I would probably not consider continuing to place an ET tube and go right for a surgical airway.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, if I'm dealing with a patient that, you know, like, let's say trismus, right? So, and like, no matter what medication you give them, the jaw doesn't release. You're probably dealing with a fucked up, broken face that you should have criked a long time ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Remember, can't ventilate, can't oxygenate. It's a big thing here. And if you're having to break BVM to suction the patient, then you're probably not going to have a patient that you're able to successfully, you know, electively take that airway. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, if you're dealing with a patient that, you know, shit, I keep having to stop and suction, that's a can't ventilate, can't oxygenate.
I had a patient the other day that had a tumor in their trachea.
Yeah.
They had an airway of 5 millimeters.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yes. Yes.
5 millimeters.
That's very small. and you know, that's a fucking crike, you know what I mean, right away. So, you know, I like to mention that, you know, crike is an answer for one problem.
Only one.
Can't ventilate, can't oxygenate.
Right.
So if you're dealing with can't ventilate, can't oxygenate, then the patient requires you to do a surgical airway. It should not be a rescue airway device because you can't fucking intubate. You know what I'm saying? If you can't intubate, then that's not you need a class. Come see the rescue company one for the difficult airway
course
EMS.
We do have a difficult airway class.
The difficult airway course EMS. You can come take that here.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and you'll basically, our goal is to make sure you never crike unless you encounter a can't ventilate, can't oxygenate situation. So
that's bad.
There's your clue.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You got anything else for people? Listen to us.
We already talked about that. Yeah, give us stars. Follow us.
Yep.
The only other thing that I would say is treat people how you want to be treated.
Yeah. Be nice to people.
Like, don't be an asshole. Be nice.
Yeah.
If you don't think that you would like the way that you're talking to somebody, if they're talking to you that way, you probably should talk to them nicer or whatever.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been drinking.
I know. I love you very much.
And you kept telling me to have a drink. So
yeah, well, you kept clearing your throat.
Well,
you know, so
maybe I was thirsty.
Well, and looks like
now I'm not thirsty anymore.
Yeah. So, you know, be safe out there. You know, be ethical. Follow the rules that benefits the patient. You know what I'm saying? Don't do things that you've always done that may not be beneficial to the patient.
Yeah.
There's so much of that stuff going on right now. Just
fucking,
like,
kills me.
Yeah, just so much, like, just it's negligent. It's negligent, and you know, some people are getting away with it.
That's a topic for, like, next week.
Yeah, so, but, you know, be safe. Do the right thing. Until next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.